Welcome to Machon Adar podcast. My name is Rabbi Eli Confer, and in today's Tefillah Toolkit, we're going to look at Hallel. Hallel is the set of psalms that is recited in certain holidays. The structure of Hallel is worth noting for a moment, but we're actually going to look today at the way we recite Hallel as a window into what the potential meaning of Hallel could be, or how to make sense out of the experience of Hallel. As we're going to see, Hallel is recited in a very specific and particular way and has encoded throughout it various forms of repetition. So the question of this podcast is, what is the meaning that lies behind repetition? Specifically, repetition done in the performance of a liturgy. But before we get to that question, I want to note some features about the nature of Hallel itself. Hallel appears originally only recited 18 times during the year, 8 times during Sukkot, and 8 times during Hanukkah, once on Pesach and the night of the Seder, and once on Shavuot. In addition to its original form of recitation, the structure of Hallel remains consistent throughout, which is a structure of 6 psalms running from Psalm 113 to Psalm 118. Hallel is made up of these 6 psalms, and in fact, a unit of 6 psalms is the basic liturgical unit of reciting psalms in Jewish prayer. You can think of 2 other famous examples. One is on Kabbalat Shabbat, the service that was written in 16th century Tzfat to welcome the Sabbath queen, was introduced by 6 psalms that precede the crescendo of the poem of Lecha Dodi. In addition, the section of morning prayer known as Psukei DeZimra, the songs are really the verses of praise, the core unit of that section is also made up of 6 psalms, running from Ashrei Psalm 145 all the way through the end of Psalm 150. And indeed, in certain rabbinic sources, Psukei DeZimra is also referred to as Hallel. The unit of Hallel is 6 psalms, but what's important to note for our purposes here is that the recitation of those psalms is one that is marked by repetition. The word itself, the word Hallel or Hallelujah, has encoded within it a certain type of repetition, the sound ha-la-la-la-la-la-la, which is probably related to how the word came to be, is a repeating phrase sound. But encoded beyond that sound in the structure of Hallel is a form of repetition. We're going to look at 2 of those forms of repetition, and then we're going to look at the meaning that stands behind that repetition. Now, in order to look at the repetition as it appears in Hallel, I invite you, if you have access to a Tanakh, to a Bible, to open up and look at the last psalm in Hallel, Psalm 118, which is the psalm we're going to be focusing on as an example of what it means to repeat words in Hallel. Now, before we look in depth at that psalm, let's look at one way the Mishnah tries to understand how Hallel is meant to be recited. The Mishnah in Masechet Sukkah reads, Makom shenahagu lichpol, yichpol, lifshot, yifshot, livarech, yivarech, hakol k'minhag medina. In a place in which they had accustomed to double, that is to say, to repeat a verse, they would repeat a verse. To restrict a verse, to keep a verse not repeated, they would restrict the verse. To bless, and here they mean the blessing that follows Hallel, presumably, they would bless. Everything according to the custom of the local area. Now, in trying to understand what the practice of lichpol is, the practice of doubling, Rashi gives an amazing comment that understands and analyzes the inherent doubling of Psalm 118, the last psalm in the series of Hallel, as a way of noting how one might be drawn to double further in that psalm. What Rashi picks up on is the nature of this psalm is filled with repetition already. Let's look closely at this psalm and follow Rashi as he takes us through the way in which the psalm is filled with repetitions. The psalm opens with the verse, Hodu l'Adonai ki tov, ki le'olam chasdo. That verse also ends the psalm. The last verse of the psalm, Psalm 29, repeats, Hodu l'Adonai ki tov, ki le'olam chasdo. Now, the verse means something where a leader would say out to a congregation, Hodu, give thanks, give praise to Adonai, who is good. And presumably everybody else might respond, Ki le'olam chasdo, God's chesed, God's love, endures forever, is eternal. So there is a doubling, there's also a minor doubling within the verse itself with the word ki, ki tov, ki le'olam chasdo. But also the verse itself repeats at the beginning and the end and serves as an envelope for the entire psalm itself. Now one could imagine that at the end of every verse in the psalm, the congregation would respond by saying, Ki le'olam chasdo. And indeed, in the first four verses of this psalm, Ki le'olam chasdo is the end of each of those verses. So there is some sense that this is the refrain that's meant to be said by the congregation in this psalm. But Rashi points to the way in which the psalm doubles way beyond this first and last verse. Starting in verse 2, 3, and 4, those verses open with the command, Yomar Na, or Yomru Na. Yomar Na Yisrael, say Israel. Yomru Na Beit Aharon, say House of Aaron. Yomru Na Yirei Adonai, say all who fear God. Ki le'olam chasdo. It's almost a prompt for everybody to say this refrain of Ki le'olam chasdo. But Rashi notes in which the Yomar, Yomru Na, is itself a doubling. Moving down to verse 5, Mina Meitzar Karati Yah, Anani Bamerchav Yah. The Yah name of God is doubled and repeated in that verse 5. In verse 6, Adonai Li Lo Ira, God is with me, I shall not fear. And in verse 7, Adonai Li, again, God is with me. Both verses open with the same language. In verses 8 and 9, Rashi notes, Tov Lachasot Badonai, begins verse 8, and Tov Lachasot Badonai begins verse 9, both starting off with, it is good to trust in God. In verses 10, 11, and 12, the verb sivavuni or sabuni, surround me, is what's repeated. Kol goyim sivavuni in verse 10, all the nations surrounded me. In verse 11, sabuni gam sivavuni, they surrounded, yes, surrounded me. In verse 12, sabuni kidvorim, they surrounded me like bees. In verse 13, Dacho Dechitani is repeated. And in verse 14 and 15, the words Yeshua is repeated. Oziva Zimratia, Vahili Lishua, God will be a salvation to me. Kol Rinav Yeshua, joy and salvation, in verse 15. In verse 16, Rashi points out, Yamin Adonai repeats, the right hand of God. Yamin Adonai Romema, Yamin Adonai Osachayo. In verse 17 and 18, Lo Amut, I shall not die. And in 18, Lamavet Lo Natanani, I will not be given over to death. And finally, in verses 19 and 20, the word Sha'ar, gate, Pitchuli Sha'arei Tzedek, open for me the gates of righteousness. Zashar Ladonai, in verse 20, this is the gate of Hashem. So as Rashi runs through this psalm, there is a repetition either within each particular verse or between consecutive verses, all the way running from the first verse to verse 20. Now, starting in verse 21, O Decha Ki Anitani, there is no more repetition, and that's where Rashi points out we are meant to double, or to say the custom of doubling begins running from verse 21 through verse 28. And when one doubles those final eight verses, then we have an effect of all of Psalm 118 is filled with repetitions. There's no part of the psalm that is said only once. The main theme of this psalm is doubled so that we get it over and over again. And indeed, this idea that doubling, lichpol, which the Mishnah recommends as one of the ways to recite Hallel, is specifically applied to the end of Psalm 118, is affirmed in the Talmud itself when Abaye, commenting on this phrase, my mosif, Rabbi Elazar ben Parta, mosif ba devarim, Rabbi Elazar ben Parta would add words to Hallel. The Gemara asks, what would he add? And Abaye responds, mosif lichpol me'odecha ulamata. He would double, he would add by doubling from verse 21 in Psalm 118, odecha, all the way down through the end of the psalm. The idea of doubling that's mentioned in the Mishnah as applied specifically to Psalm 118 is very old. Now, beyond the doubling inside of this particular psalm in Hallel, there's another aspect of doubling that I want to explore before we understand the meaning behind doubling. In order to explore this aspect of doubling, we're going to look at the way in which the leader of the Hallel verses would interact with the congregation. And in order to understand how that dynamic worked, we're going to have to explore one other question which stands behind this, which is, how was the song of the sea, the Shirat Hayam, the song that is said after Bnei Yisrael crossed over from Egypt to safety, how was that song recited? And what was the interaction between Moses, who was the leader, and Bnei Yisrael, who was the congregation, in the reciting of that song? As we're going to see, this has a direct bearing and relationship to the recitation of Hallel. Now, the question of how to recite the Song of the Sea, or how the Song of the Sea, Shirat Hayam, was recited, comes out of a textual problem in the first verse. The verse opens and says, in chapter 15 of Exodus, Az Yashir Moshe Uvenei Yisrael, then Moses and the children of Israel sang, Et Hashira Hazot LaAdonai, this song to God, Vayomru Lemor. They said, saying, Vayomru Lemor. Now, those two words, Vayomru Lemor, seem to be an unnecessary repetition. Both are from the root amar, to say. And why do we need to double that by saying Vayomru Lemor? There are three interpretations that three different rabbis offer to this unnecessary doubling. What's common to all of those opinions is that this song was recited in a call and response from leader to congregation. Moses said something, and Bnei Israel said something in response. Now, they disagree about what the response was, but the format is common to all the opinions. Just briefly touching on the first two, and then we're going to dive into the third, which is directly related to Hallel. The first two opinions, one is that Bnei Israel would recite exactly what Moshe said. So if Moshe says, Ashir el Adonai, Bnei Israel would say, Ashir el Adonai. And if Moshe says, Ki ga'o ga'a, Bnei Israel would repeat, Ki ga'o ga'a. It's a straight up call and response repetition. A second opinion has a more interesting approach in that Bnei Israel had a divine experience in which Moses begins the verse, Bnei Israel repeats that beginning, and through divine intervention, understands what the end of the verse should be. So Moses says, Oziv Ezimrat Yah, and Bnei Israel repeats Oziv Ezimrat Yah, but continues through divine inspiration, saying, Vayhi Li Lishua. Now the third opinion is the one that's related to our recitation of Hallel, and in many of the rabbinic sources is offered by Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says the model for reciting Song of the Sea is Hallel. That is to say, the contemporary practice that Rabbi Akiva knows for how the congregation and the leader interact when reciting Hallel. So Rabbi Akiva says, Ketzad Amru Shira, how did they say the Song of the Sea? Ki gadol hamakreet Hallel, vehein onin acharav rashei prakim. It's like an adult who leads the congregation in Hallel, where the congregation responds after the leader, the headline, the first part of the chapter. He gives an example. Moshe Amar Ashir El Adonai. Moshe says, I will sing to Adonai, Vehein Omrim Ashir El Adonai, and they respond by saying, I will sing to Adonai. Moshe says, Ki ga'o ga'a, Vehein Omrim Ashir El Adonai. Moses says the next phrase, but B'nai Israel continues with the first response, which they say all the way throughout, Ashira Ladonai. Now, here we can see there might have been an old practice of reciting Hallel, as we noted, where everybody in the congregation says the same thing all the way throughout. Now, that could be simply the word Hallelujah. Hallel starts with the word Hallelujah. And that could be the congregational response. It could also be Ki Le'olam Chasdo, as we saw, was probably a response that runs through Psalm 118 and is also a congregational response in another Hallel Psalm, Psalm 136, which is called Hallel HaGadol, which also every line ends, Ki Le'olam Chasdo. But either way, whatever it was recited, the same thing was recited over and over again. What's important for our purposes is that the recitation of Hallel is marked by repetition. The congregation repeats some sort of refrain, and the experience of saying Hallel is one that is marked by the same words said over and over again. Now, what is the point of this repetition? What's the significance of building a liturgy that is fundamentally surrounded by the same words over and over again? Why pick a psalm that is marked and punctuated by repeating words as the crescendo psalm in the Hallel liturgy? In order to understand the significance of the repetition in reciting Hallel, I want to look at a different example of the way the rabbis understood repetition as it relates to certain emotional states. And here I'm going to draw us to a midrash that is in the beginning of the book of Vayikra. When God calls to Moshe, the Midrash understands that call, and in fact, every time God called to Moshe, as God repeating Moshe's name, saying, Moshe, Moshe. And the Midrash goes on and cites other places in Torah where God explicitly repeats the name of the person that God is calling out to, Avraham, Avraham, Yaakov, Yaakov, and Shmuel, Shmuel. Then the Midrash understands why or what is the purpose of this repetition. The Midrash explains that this is Lashon Chiba and Lashon Ziruz. This is a language of intimacy, of love, and a language of urgency. Now, in the language of intimacy, you can imagine when you are in love, you want to say over and over again how much you love the person that you are in love with, and you want to say their name over and over again as an expression of that love. Repetition is a window into a certain emotional connection that the speaker has with the person being spoken to. And here, applying that to Hallel is our way of expressing our love, or if you understand, as Sadja Gaon did, the verses of Psalms to be God's revelation to us and not our prayer to God, it could be God expressing God's love to us. Either way, the love is deep as it is expressed in the repetition of the words. Now, Lashon Ziruz, this language of urgency, one can imagine one repeats things when one wants to hurry up. You're ready to go and you call the person you're waiting for. You call their name over and over again until they come, until they show up. There's something to be done and we're going to repeat what needs to be repeated until we're ready to go. When you're motivated to do something and to do it quickly, to do it now, repetition comes into play. So both Lashon Chiba and Lashon Ziruz are aspects of the deeper meaning of what it means to repeat something. I want to add one other angle that the Midrash brings into play about what it might mean to say something again. And here, the Midrash reads, Davar Acher, Moshe, Moshe, Hu Moshe ad shelo nidaber imo? Hu Moshe mishe nidaber imo? The repetition of the name Moses, Moses, is pointing to the fact that Moses is the same person before God spoke to Moses and after God speaks to Moses. That is to say, the interaction at the burning bush when God calls out Moshe, Moshe, is the moment which changes Moses' life and sets him on a completely new direction. And yet, he retains an internal core that remains constant. Or to put it another way, when you repeat something, you say the same thing again, and that can remind us how the same thing lasts even though time moves on. We're saying the same thing in different contexts, in different moments, but there's a sameness that is common throughout. Now, this can, on the one hand, be dangerous because it could lead to stasis or a lack of growth, but on the other hand, is an opportunity to reflect on the way in which, even though we certainly change in significant and important ways over the course of our lives, there is some essential core to all of us that remains the same. And when feeling lost or uncertain or unsure, to know that by repeating and by saying this again, we call upon that core as the essential part of us that always remains and that's always there with us, can be very comforting and grounding in a very practical way. So repetition can be inclusive of a feeling of love and emotion, chiba, a feeling of urgency, ziruz, and a feeling of constancy, I am the same Moshe before and after the burning bush. There's one final aspect of repetition that I want to explore in this podcast, and that gets to the question of language itself. What is the benefit of saying words over and over again, as opposed to any type of mantra that could also give the experience of repetition? Now, I want to introduce this final part with a quote from one of my favorite authors, Catherine Madsen, who wrote a wonderful book about the difficulty of writing new liturgy, which is called The Bones Reassemble. And in that book, she reflects and says, language designed for repetition must build in a certain intractable strangeness. I'm going to repeat that. Language designed for repetition must build in a certain intractable strangeness. I think what Madsen's point here is that if you're trying to write liturgy, liturgy needs to last not just for a moment, but for a generation, indeed for multiple generations. It's meant to last for a very long time. And in order for that phrase or that set of liturgy to be repeated over and over again without losing its power, it needs to be a little strange. It needs to be a little bit hard to understand, a little bit difficult, because if everything were surface about it, it would get boring very quickly. And so what one aspect of the repetition of Hallel is to note the way in which these psalms have strange or hard to interpret or words that have multiple meanings wrapped up within them. And repeating those words is a gesture at noting the way in which those words endure because they are hard to understand. Now, I want to look at one example in which this plays out towards the end of Hallel, at the end of Psalm 118, the psalm we've been looking at, which is a six-word phrase that is very hard to understand. Isru chag ba'avotim ad karnod hamizbeach. Now, the biblical interpretation of that, if you look at a modern translation, reads it as follows. Isru chag ba'avotim, bind, Isru, bind the chag, the festal offering, ba'avotim, with cords, with rope, ad karnod hamizbeach, until the horns of the altar. Bind the festal offering to the horns of the altar with cords. But there's enough ambiguity in so many of the words in this phrase that there are multiple potential understandings that go in different directions. And three of those come up in quick succession in the Talmud. Now, the Talmud is trying to understand this mitzvah of the Arava. Now, in explaining this phrase, the Gemara comes to it by trying to understand a statement in the Mishnah which is describing the part of the end of Sukkot in which people surround the altar with the branches, by laying the branches of the lulav binding against the altar. Ba'in v'zokfinotan b'tzidei ha-mizbeach. They come and they lean them against the sides of the altar. Rabbi Abahu asks the question, Maikra'a, what's the scriptural source for this custom? Shene'emar isru chag ba'avotim ad karnot ha-mizbeach. He quotes our phrase, but here understanding it not in the way that the modern Bible translations read it, but rather isru chag, isru, encircle, like matir asurim, who frees the captives. A captive is somebody who is encircled by binds and chains. So encircle, isru, with branches, ba'avotim, not cords here, but branches, like anaf eitz avot, the branch of the thick tree. Isru chag ba'avotim, encircle with branches on the festival. Chag here is not the festival offering, but rather the festival itself. Chag, chag ha-sukkot. Isru chag ba'avotim, encircle with branches on the festival, ad karnot ha-mizbeach, until they reach the corners of the altar. Now the Gemara goes on in this section and gives us another understanding, also quoted by Rabbi Abahu. It's interesting that Rabbi Abahu himself can hold two meanings of this verse. Rabbi Abahu quotes his teacher, Rabbi Elazar, as saying, Kol anotel lulav b'igudo, v'hadas ba'avuto, ma'ale alav ha-katuv, ki'ilu bana mizbeach v'ikriv alav korban, sh'ne'emar, isru chag ba'avotim, ad karnot ha-mizbeach. Whoever takes the lulav in its binding, and the hadas in its thickness, it is as if they have built an altar and sacrificed upon it, as it says, isru chag ba'avotim, ad karnot ha-mizbeach. Here, the phrase is understood, isru is back to the JPS understanding of bind, but avotim here is not cords, but rather the branches. Isru ba'avotim, bind those branches together on the festival until the horns of the altar. Now, a third interpretation, the final interpretation that Gemara offers, attributed to a number of different rabbinic sources, is Kol ha'oseh isur lechag ba'achila ushtia, ma'ale alav ha'katuv ki'ilu bana mizbeach v'ikriv alav korban, sh'ne'emar, isru chag ba'avotim ad karnot ha-mizbeach. Whoever does isur lechag, which here they understand as adding or binding to the chag, that is to say, wrapping around the chag more time with achila ushtia, with food and drink, whoever adds to the chag another day of eating and drinking, it's as if he built an altar and sacrificed upon it. As it says, Isru chag ba'avotim. Here, Isru means to bind, but to bind in time the festival to the next day. And avotim here doesn't mean cords, ropes, or the branches of the lulav, but rather fattened animals, avotim, ave meaning fat or thick, fattened animals. Add to the festival, isru chag, with fattened animals, ba'avotim, achila ushtia, until the horns of the altar. What you have here is three different understandings, besides for the supposedly straight up understanding as offered by the modern biblical translations of this six-word phrase, Isru chag ba'avotim ad karnot ha-mizbeach. Now, this phrase is part of Psalm 118, which needs to be doubled in order to match the flow of the earlier part of the psalm in which so many of the words are doubled. But until the tradition came to double it, we would only say it once in the original recitation of the psalm. But in Hallel, we make sure to double this line. And my point is that part of the reason to double this line is to note the way in which the language of this line is strange, is hard to understand, has multiple meanings, is not surface, is not clear. So part of the goal of repetition is to evoke a certain set of emotions, as we saw earlier, chiba, love, ziruz, urgency, and some sense that Moshe is the same Moshe some constancy of identity that runs through time when things are repeated, but also to note the way in which language itself is strange, hard to understand, and has multiple meanings encoded within it. I'm going to close with another quote from Catherine Madsen, who imagines the way in which liturgy is enduring. She says, "Liturgy is not really an argument. It is an experience and proceeds not from point to point of logic, but from state to state of consciousness. The liturgy that we recite on Hallel is not limited by a sense of trying to argue a point. It is instead trying to bring us to a state of consciousness, and oftentimes a different state of consciousness is achieved through the method of repetition." So I offer this lens of experiencing Hallel as the quintessential repeated liturgy, as a liturgy that allows us to get into the words over and over again as a way of calling up different types of emotions that might be associated with repetition, and also to experience words as needing to be repeated because there are so many different meanings that are encoded within them. Thank you for exploring Hallel and its repetitious nature with me. I invite you to join in listening to my colleagues Dina Weiss and Joey Weisenberg as they explore different parts of Hallel, Dina reflecting on the deeper meaning of aspects of the words of Hallel, and Joey teaching us one of his original melodies to a portion of Psalm 114.